This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Welcome to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, here on this Thursday afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking back at the Carabao Cup action as the semi-finalists have all been decided. Those two-legged semi-finals will take place over the course of January. Arsenal and Everton, how close are they to appointing new managers? It seems like Arteta and Ancelotti are closing in on new permanent positions. We'll also talk about Liverpool getting into the Club World Cup final. Not the greatest of performance yesterday against Monterrey, but finding yet again a way to win. Roberto Firmino scoring a late winner to send Liverpool into the final against Flamengo on Saturday. And Liverpool fans like myself woke up to the news this morning that Takumi Minamino is officially a Liverpool player after signing from Salzburg for £7.25 million. We'll be talking more in detail about Arsenal and how close they are to appointing Arteta. We'll be talking about Manchester City. They beat Oxford United. They'll play Manchester United in the Carabao Cup semi-finals. But what's the feeling about Arteta? We'll also talk a little bit about Wolves as well. Some big games coming up for them, and how frustrated were they to lose to Tottenham last weekend. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to cover over the next hour. That number again, 0208 7020 558. If you want to get in touch with us, we want to hear from you this afternoon. Obviously, the Premier League Fan Show here every weekday afternoon between 1 and 2 o'clock. So today is no different. Make sure you get in touch with us this afternoon. So let's go through the top stories. So let's look back actually last night. There were both Carabao Cup games and also the second of the Club World Cup semi-finals in the Carabao Cup at Goodison Park. Leicester are through, but it was a pretty dramatic game at Goodison Park after Leicester raced into a 2-0 lead thanks to James Maddison and Johnny Evans. Everton pegged them back. Tom Davis scored and then Leighton Baines scored what I think we usually dub as a screamer from outside the penalty area into the top corner, which meant that it went to penalties, but the penalty shootout wasn't exactly of the greatest quality. I think three of the first four penalties were saved. It wasn't exactly a great quality, although I did think, having watched the penalties again, that had those penalties been taken in normal time as an individual penalty, every single one of them would have been retaken. Because every single both goalkeepers, Jordan Pickford and Kasper Schmeichel, were both massively off their lines by the time that the penalty takers took the spot kick. So perhaps a bit of controversy there. But Leicester won 4-2 on penalties, so they take their place in the semi-finals, where they will play Aston Villa. It will be at Leicester in the first leg and then at Villa Park in the second leg. The other two games in the Carabao Cup involve the two Manchester clubs. Oxford United 1, Manchester City 3. Joao Cancelo scored his first goal. Oxford did equalise through Matty Taylor just after half-time, but two Raheem Sterling goals made sure of the win. Although Oxford United, I think, can hold their heads up high and actually put in a pretty decent performance against, obviously, a pretty good team in Manchester City. So City go through. The other Manchester club, took them a long while to break Colchester down, but in the end they did win by 3-0, which sets up an All-Manchester League Cup semi-final. United will be at home in the first leg, City will be at home in the second leg. So those two League Cup semi-finals will be Manchester United against Manchester City and Leicester against Aston Villa. Those ties will be played for the first one near the beginning of January. The second leg will be played towards the end of January. Before those Carabao Cup fixtures last night at 5:30 over in Doha at the Khalifa International Stadium. Bit of a different look compared to when the Athletics was going on a couple of months ago in the World Championships, where there was barely 1,000 people there to watch the 100-metre final for the men's. It was a very different story with a packed out Khalifa International Stadium as Liverpool took on the Mexican champions Monterrey, and it was a tough game for Liverpool. The pitch wasn't exactly the greatest of qualities. It was the third game in a space of 24 hours on that pitch, but it kind of, to me, it felt like it was reminiscent actually of the weekend's game against Watford, where I think we just rocked up expecting it to be very, very easy, and it was quite lackadaisical at times, just quite slow, lethargic. Everything was just a little bit off it yesterday. There were moments of real quality. Mo Salah's ball for the first goal for Naby Keita, who scored his third goal in three games, was exquisite. That was a real bit of quality. Liverpool were then pegged back just 2 minutes later by Rogério Funes Mori, which is the twin brother of Ramiro Funes Mori, who Everton fans will remember. Only about 120 seconds after Liverpool had taken the lead, it took a long, long while for Liverpool to break Monterrey down in the second half. It kind of got into that style of Liverpool dominating possession, but it was quite slow, lethargic possession, and Monterrey trying to play on the counter-attack. But eventually Jurgen Klopp brought some of the superstar names on, some of the guaranteed starters, the likes of Sadio Mane, Roberto Firmino and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And in the end, it was two of the substitutes that combined an exquisite low cross, a brilliantly weighted ball by Trent Alexander-Arnold into the near post, and a cute finish at the near post by Roberto Firmino sent Liverpool into the final. It was the final that was hoped for from many people. It is Liverpool against Flamengo on Saturday evening. Again, it's a 5:30 kickoff, and it's going to be a real contrast in styles and obviously very, very different when you're playing a European side against a Brazilian side. The fantastic Brazil or South American expert Tim Vickery was talking about yesterday on the coverage on BBC about how Flamengo tend to struggle when teams press them high up the pitch, and not a lot of sides do that in Brazil. And also they play a very, very high defensive line, which you'd imagine for us should suit us playing against a team that plays very high up with a front three of Mane, Firmino and Salah. So it was the game that everyone wanted to see. Flamengo actually beat Liverpool in 1981 in what was the Intercontinental Cup, which is now the Club World Cup. It was 3-0 in 1981. So a replay of that final. It should be a great, great final on Saturday, the one that everyone was hoping for. And for Liverpool fans like myself, it was even better news this morning at 8 o'clock on the dot, the announcement of the signing of Takumi Minamino. Now, only emerged in the public sphere only just over a week ago that Liverpool were in talks and were closing in on the signing of Salzburg and the Japanese winger slash forward Takumi Minamino. Actually, as we understood, Liverpool been scouting him for a number of years, and actually conversations, negotiations have been going on for a few months. Liverpool sporting director Michael Edwards has a terrific relationship with the Salzburg hierarchy, including their sporting director, Christoph Freund. So it had been in the pipeline for a few months, but it had gone under the radar. Liverpool managed to get the deal done, and kind of the most important aspect of it all as well is the fact that Liverpool were the only ones to know of this release clause. There was so much interest around Europe that didn't know of this release clause, but Liverpool did know about this £7.25 million release clause. It is an absolute steal. It would have been a steal 10 years ago, but in this modern era of inflated football prices, it really is a bargain deal. So Minamino has signed. He underwent his medical yesterday, signed personal terms. He signed a 4.5-year deal until the summer of 2024. He will join on the 1st of January, which could mean his Liverpool debut, like Virgil van Dijk's, could be in the third round of the FA Cup at home against Everton in the Merseyside derby. Minamino has 9 goals and 11 assists so far in 22 games in all competitions. He's 11 goals in 22 international appearances for Japan, and he fits the bill perfectly for Jurgen Klopp, and that's why he was so keen to bring him on board, not just in the summer, but in January. A very versatile player, can play across a number of different positions, can play across the front three, which will be invaluable in the second half of the season and going forward. His work rate on and off the ball is massive. Anyone that watches a Jurgen Klopp team knows how important it is that players work incredibly hard off the ball and when Liverpool don't have possession, as well as when we are in possession. So he's going to fit that high energy, high intensity type of player that when you play in a Jurgen Klopp team, you need that stamina. That you think of a player like Daniel Sturridge, a very, very talented player, but just never fit in because he, and this isn't meant as a massive dig at Daniel Sturridge, but just wasn't part of his game. He couldn't physically work that hard. And also, it's sustaining those levels, not just across a 90-minute game, but across a whole season. So it just fits the bill brilliantly as a player in terms of Jurgen Klopp's style, the versatility, high energy, very clever on the ball, gets between the lines. But also in terms of the money as well, £7.25 million is an absolute bargain. He's worth at least three or four times that in this modern day. So a fantastic signing for all of us Liverpool fans, and he will officially become a Liverpool player on the 1st of January. He won't be able to play in the Premier League game against Sheffield United on the 2nd, but he will be available for the FA Cup game at home against Everton. A couple of managerial stories that are obviously ongoing this week, and they are seemingly closing in on a conclusion. Both at Everton and Arsenal, after they sacked Marco Silva and Unai Emery, respectively, they are close to appointing new managers. At Arsenal, interestingly, their press conference has been postponed. We are going to get James Benge, senior writer at Football.London, on. He originally said he wasn't going to be able to do today because of the press conference, but that press conference has been... I could have done... Oh, that was a missed opportunity. But... The press conference has been moved until tomorrow, indicating that we could have news of the appointment of Mikel Arteta in the next 24 hours before the weekend. Also, up on Merseyside at Everton, they are very, very close to appointing their new manager, and it is set to be Carlo Ancelotti on a 4.5-year contract. He's gone back to Napoli to sort out all the deals of terminating his contract. I don't really get why. If you sack a manager, you're effectively terminating their contract. So why... Should you have to go and have these other negotiations? That team has just sacked you. They didn't want you. So why on earth do you have to go back? But anyway, he's gone back to Italy, to Naples, to sort that out. It has been sorted out. It is expected that it probably won't be announced until Saturday. Now, that would indicate that Duncan Ferguson will continue to take caretaker charge until the weekend. And what game is it at Goodison Park? It's Everton against Arsenal. So it may be that neither new manager will be in the dugout on Saturday, but they will certainly be there at Goodison Park. But we are expecting announcements on those very, very soon. Probably, it looks like, even though it looked like it was going to be Ancelotti before Arteta, I think it is going to be Mikel Arteta over the next day or so, and Ancelotti probably on the weekend. But both Everton and Arsenal closing in on new managers. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us this afternoon. Later in the hour, we're going to be talking about Wolves. Where are they this season? Do they think they can finish top four? They're currently 8th place, but only a couple of points behind Tottenham in 5th. 5 points off Chelsea in 4th. So what are they looking for this season? We're also going to talk about Manchester City. They're into the Carabao Cup semi-finals again. They will take on their City rivals, Manchester United, in the semi-finals. But up next, potentially, Mikel Arteta is closing in on a move to the Emirates. We'll be talking all things Arsenal next.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. As I mentioned, two clubs are closing in on new managers. Everton are closing in on Carlo Ancelotti. Arsenal are seemingly on the verge of appointing Mikel Arteta, their former player and captain, as their new head coach. To talk all things Arsenal now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by James Benge, senior writer at Football.London. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, James. As I was saying a few minutes ago, it seemed like you weren't going to be available now because there was supposed to be a press conference that would have been happening around now. Then that's been postponed until tomorrow. I'm assuming, James, that at any point in the next 24 hours, Mikel Arteta's appointment could be announced.
Yeah, that's the expectation. I think it's a bit of a fool's game to try and guess when Arsenal will officially announce that Mikel Arteta is their manager. But, you know, we're at that stage now. I think there's still some final details to be ironed out with Manchester City about how much it costs to get him in at the club. But, you know, City are quite annoyed about the way Arsenal have handled things here, but it's not going to stop them from greenlighting the deal and letting Arteta join. Obviously, that, you know, it is going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
As you kind of mentioned there about Manchester City's feelings towards this deal, they're not particularly happy. They're not going to stand in his way, as you mentioned there, but they are insisting, apparently, on about £2 million in compensation. Why has it been... It's been seemingly quite cloak and dagger, really, this approach, and seemingly done a little bit underhand. Why have Arsenal approached it this way? Why didn't they just come out and say to City they want him as their new manager? Can they have open talks with him? Because I think City would have been open to that. So why didn't Arsenal do that?
Oh, I don't really know. I think the reality here is that this is the way that transfer business is conducted everywhere across the league, across Europe. You know, you get the agreement from the player, or in this case, the manager first, and then you go to the club knowing that you'll get your man, because obviously the worst thing in the world to do is for Manchester City to agree to allow you to talk to Arteta, and then Arteta turns around and says, well, we don't want to talk. I don't necessarily think Arsenal have done anything hugely wrong here, and I think it's quite interesting to see Manchester City take this sort of stance when, if you look back on their pursuit of Arsenal players like Alexis Sanchez, it's fair to say they've certainly disrupted things at Arsenal a great deal. So Arsenal would just sort of say, look, you know, that we're doing things the way everyone else does. But it does seem odd in all this time to have not just picked up the phone to Manchester City and gone, we'd like to talk to Mikel Arteta, and of course we'll pay the release clause.
Interestingly, the game that Arsenal have up next is against Everton at the weekend, who could have a new manager in place, which would be Carlo Ancelotti. Now, he was linked with Arsenal when he was sacked by Napoli. Are you surprised that Arteta is the man that they've gone for when someone like Ancelotti was available? What would you make of the decision that Arteta is their man rather than someone of much more experience than Ancelotti?
Well, if you take someone like Ancelotti, I think it's Arsenal know their squad well enough to know why he wouldn't work there. He's the sort of player, a manager that works very well with a team that's already set up and knows how it's going to approach things. He's good at managing egos. What he's not good at is revolutionising a club. Now, we don't know if Arteta can do that, but we know that, you know, top-level managers like Guardiola, Wenger, Pochettino, they all think he could do that. I think to an extent, you're trusting in potential. Arsenal know Mikel Arteta really well from his time at the club. You know, obviously he's going to be an even better coach for having worked with Guardiola for 3 years. So it's a gamble. It's a shot in the dark. But, you know, at the same time, you know what you're getting with Ancelotti, and he's not necessarily someone that fits. I think if Brendan Rodgers had been available, he may well have been the one that really pushed Arteta hard for this. He wasn't available, so I think Arteta then becomes the only option. I don't think there wasn't an outstanding candidate who could have beaten Arteta to the job.
Obviously, there'll be a number of problems that Mikel Arteta is going to have to sort out. I mean, I suppose we still have to say if he gets the job, but we do expect him to get that job in January. Obviously, we're not that far away from that. Just a couple of weeks' time, the January transfer window will open. Do you think that the Arsenal board will give him some funds? And if so, how much would you expect Arsenal? How many signings do you expect them to make, considering there is a common theory, although I'm not sure it's 100% true, that January is close to an impossible window to buy in?
Yeah, they won't be giving Arteta huge amounts of money to spend. And, you know, I think a lot of the players that they would look at, they'll have to sell someone beforehand to get him in. So take someone like, you know, if they were looking for a centre-back, which I think everyone would agree they need. Well, actually, the problem at Arsenal isn't that they don't have enough centre-backs. It's that the ones that they have are nowhere near good enough. So if they can sell someone like Mustafi for a good fee, then potentially that fee could be reinvested into buying a better centre-back. You know, I don't know if it's the case that they'd look at doing that with other centre-backs. But to be honest, I think that Luiz and Socrates should both be available if any club wants to buy them. But, you know, there may be the potential for a loan move to fill some of the problem positions. I mean, we're waiting to hear whether Sead Kolasinac is going to be fit for the trip to Everton on Saturday. If not, Arsenal have no left-backs in the squad. So potentially they might, you know, look to fill that gap while Tierney is out for about 3 months. But I really wouldn't expect Arsenal to be conducting big overhauls of their squad in January. It's not something they as a club want to do. So there might be the odd addition, but I wouldn't expect big spending.
There's a common belief when you talk to people that are kind of in the know at Manchester City that he is very, very good on the training pitch, that he works really well with the players tactically. I think Guardiola talks about him having a really good brain and a really good eye for things in a coaching way. Do you think if and when he comes into Arsenal that it is as simple as, I mean, obviously he's not going to turn everything around, but there is going to be a significant change just down to his coaching, or are there much bigger problems at stake here that means even though Arteta might improve certain things, he's not going to be able to work wonders with this current squad?
Yeah, I think in the end, if you hire someone like Arteta, you know, a young coach who's going to be learning, you're doing this for the long haul, and for that reason, you know, you're prioritising him over maybe some people in the squad. And, you know, we know that Arsenal would like to move on from Mesut Ozil. There's a strong possibility that if a buyer emerges in the summer for Aubameyang and he doesn't sign a new contract, he'd go. Granit Xhaka, I think, is another that they're going to consider any reasonable offers for. And they've got good young players coming through. So I think in the end, Arsenal's real focus is going to be on a long-term rebuild. And maybe now they're coming to accept that, look, you know, the Champions League, it might not be a prospect this season or even the season after in terms of qualifying for it. And they're prepared to take their time. You know, hiring Unai Emery, that was about get us back in the top four quickly and we can build from there. I think Arsenal now are kind of coming around to seeing that there are bigger structural issues at this club that will take longer to solve than just half a season.
One word you mentioned a few times there, James, that isn't afforded nowadays much in the Premier League, and that is time. You said that how it is going to take time for this rebuild, that a number of players might have to leave, and then obviously some young players starting to emerge. Realistically, though, how much time are one, the Arsenal board, going to afford him, and two, the fans? Because obviously they'll be happy to see a former player, someone who even captained Arsenal during his playing days, come back to the club. But realistically, if things don't at least look like they're looking up and there's a positive direction, how much time realistically do you think Mikel Arteta's got before sort of people start inevitably in this modern era, start questioning whether he's got the ability to turn things around at Arsenal?
Oh, I mean, as you say, you make a good point that Arsenal fans, they're not exactly renowned for their patience above all else. Having said that, I think everyone to do with Arsenal understands that, you know, Arteta is an appointment for the long haul. It's not about fixing the squad immediately and making these changes right away. I would expect that even all but the sort of most rabid fans will give him until the end of the season pretty much free from any judgment, unless it actually looks like they might get relegated, which isn't impossible at the moment. I think he will have time on his side. It's so difficult to know with a club like Arsenal when the spotlight is shining on you week in, week out. I wouldn't guarantee that he has any amount of time, but, you know, Arsenal are not here hiring someone for an immediate new manager bounce. They're hiring someone to build with.
And just finally, James, I mentioned a few minutes ago that Arsenal's next game is against Everton, who could have a new manager in place. Whether Ancelotti will be in time, you think, is unlikely, and Ferguson will take interim charge. Now, as I said, he's not confirmed yet that Arteta is the Arsenal manager, but with this press conference moving, the suggestion is maybe in the next 24 hours. So it's probably unlikely he's going to maybe in the dugout, but do you think he will have any sort of significant impact on selection, on tactics going into that game on Saturday, or is that going to be kind of too close a call between potentially an announcement of his appointment and the game?
Yeah, I don't think so. My understanding is that he'll be in the stands at Goodison Park and Freddie Ljungberg will do the coaching. Then I think, you know, Arteta would probably want to watch the game and see how his players get on before he tries to instill any instructions in them. I remember Arsene Wenger doing something quite similar when he first took over. So I would suspect what we're going to see is Arteta just watching and learning and seeing what he can apply in the training ground on Monday.
And just one final one, James. Because of his age, and I'm not, this isn't ageist in any way, do you think that will have any problem to do with the players in terms of respect? Because we talk about this a lot in football of managers compared to their players, whether the current playing staff will have the respect for their manager. Because Arteta's not, let's say, 50 and been in top management for 10 years, do you think there's any risk that there might not be the respect there between playing staff and manager?
I think it probably works the other way around. I think it's more likely that you know, these players will see someone who's, you know, near to their age, a little bit older, has a track record of winning things. It might only be FA Cups, but he won a fair bit with Arsenal, and you know, someone that has come from possibly the greatest school of coaching around in working with Pep Guardiola. I mean, you know, when Arteta says to you as a player, do this, this is what they do at Manchester City, this is what they did at Barcelona and Bayern Munich, you can be pretty sure that the first team squad there, if they've got any ambition, they'll be wanting to replicate what Bayern Munich and Man City and that lot do. So I actually think that he's probably going to carry more weight and respect than maybe an older coach. You know, I mean, some of these players are 20, sort of 25, they wouldn't even remember, you know, a great 50-year-old. You know, it's probably quite depressing, but maybe some of them, they wouldn't even remember someone like Zinedine Zidane. So I think having someone that's near enough to their age, has got a bit of seniority and a bit of experience, it shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, James. That was James Benge, senior writer at football.london. As I mentioned, we were supposed to speak to James tomorrow because the press conference was supposed to be happening at this moment in time, so he wasn't going to be available. That press conference has been postponed, indicating maybe there might be an announcement over the next 24 hours. Unlikely that Arteta is going to have a massive impact and be in the dugout on Saturday, but obviously a game where it could be two new managers looking at their new sides in the form of Ancelotti and Arteta. Remember, if you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be talking Wolves later in the hour, but up next, we're going to be turning our attention to all things Manchester City.
This is Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be turning our attention to all things Manchester City now. I'm delighted to say we are joined by Ian Cheeseman from the Forever Blue podcast. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ian. Looking back at last night, then, City are into the Carabao Cup semi-finals after coming through what was not a tense tie, but Oxford gave a good effort last night as City came through by 3-1. Joao Cancelo scoring as well as 2 from Raheem Sterling. It was a bit of a test. Oxford, as I said, that they showed a lot of heart. They kept going. But ultimately, City, even though they rotated quite a bit, the quality, the likes of Raheem Sterling, who scored 33 goals for City in all competitions in 2019, that shone through in the end.
Yeah, I mean, City obviously fielded a slightly weaker team. They did last season when they beat them 3-0. So it wasn't the full Monty of City, if you like. They've got Leicester tomorrow, so clearly they were trying to protect one or two players, and they've got injury concerns as well. So with that team, with the likes of Harwood, Bellis and Garcia in defence, Phil Foden given a chance to start again in midfield, they weren't absolutely at maximum strength. There was no Kevin De Bruyne, for example, as such a crucial player. They even started the game without a recognised striker. Raheem Sterling played in the middle of the attack. Jesus came on a little bit later on. So, yeah, under those circumstances, on a blustery, rainy, cold night in Oxford, they did the job. And although Oxford made a little bit of a game of it, probably for about 15, 20 minutes in the second half, I don't think it was really anything City had to worry about. It always felt like they would win through in the end, and they responded quite quickly when the equaliser went in and sets up a tasty derby in January.
We'll come on to that in just a few minutes, Ian. You mentioned there about the centre-backs, which has been a big talking point in regards to Manchester City so far this season. Two young guys there, Taylor Hayward-Bellis, the age of 17, Eric Garcia in there as well. How did you see those two going, considering the problems that City have had, especially with Aymeric Laporte being out for so long? How did you think those two youngsters did alongside each other?
Eric Garcia is a real Rolls-Royce of a defender, reads the game brilliantly and doesn't look out of place at all. He's a little bit further advanced, I think, than Taylor Harwood-Bellis. The two of them seem to complement each other. Harwood-Bellis, a bit like Phil Foden, is, you know, as the City fans would sing, one of our own. He's a Stockport lad, you know, grew up in a Manchester City family, obviously living his dream by playing for City. Everybody wants him to do well. The Oxford goal, he was a little exposed, but that's just a little inexperience, I suspect, nothing to worry about. And obviously he was delighted to be able to play. I think the two of them complemented each other quite well, to be honest. I don't think we'll see either of them against Leicester or when it comes to the bigger games. But Garcia is starting to potentially solve City's defensive weakness in that area. Stones is injured again at the moment. So that just leaves Otamendi and Fernandinho, of course, a converted midfielder. So they are a little stretched until Aymeric Laporte's back.
As you mentioned just a few moments ago, Ian, City's draw in the League Cup semi-finals is a City rivalry. It's Manchester City against Manchester United in the semi-finals. Of the three teams that were left that City could have drawn, United, Leicester and Aston Villa, was this the tie you were looking forward to, thinking this is an opportunity to get a bit of revenge, obviously, for United beating City at the Etihad in the Premier League a couple of weeks ago? Or were you maybe looking to avoid them because of what happened in that game a few weeks ago?
Well, you know, you said I do a Forever Blue podcast. They also do a YouTube vlog every game, and I speak to City supporters before and after every game. And after the game, when the draw hadn't actually been made, I asked a few City fans, you know, who they wanted.
And you know what? They were all saying, we want United, we want United. There is a confidence. And also a feeling potentially of wanting some revenge for the Derby defeat a couple of weeks ago. I'm not sure what I wanted, really. What comes out of the hat. I know that's a bit of a boring answer, but a lot of the City fans certainly gave the vibe that they wanted United. And I actually spoke to Micah Richards after the game as well, who appears on the video, and he was really upbeat about it. You know, he wanted to draw Manchester United and, you know, was really excited about it. And I think it will be a draw that excites the fans. If City had played Leicester or Aston Villa, and United as well had played Aston Villa or Leicester in the other semi-final, I'm not sure we'd have seen full houses at Old Trafford and at the Etihad. But now, two Manchester derbies in January, what a great start to the new year. And it's a little bit tricky to call it at the moment because United did City in the derby, you know, played very well on the counter-attack. Feels like they're a team that are improving a little bit. So it's going to be fascinating to watch it. And I would still say City will start favourites over two legs with the home game and the second leg, I should say, at the Etihad. But you never know. You never know. City's track record against United at the Etihad since they moved there hasn't been as good as it's actually been at Old Trafford. So very, very difficult to call.
Those two legs, the first one will be the week beginning of January 6th. That will be at Old Trafford. Then the second leg, the week beginning January 27th at the Etihad. We're in a very, very busy period at the moment with so many fixtures are just coming thick and fast at the moment. It slightly slows in January, but you had a couple of Carabao Cup fixtures in there. How do you think Guardiola will approach his selection, considering it is Manchester United, a big, obviously, rivalry between the two Manchester clubs? Do you think Guardiola is going to go stronger than he would have done if, let's say, it was Leicester or Villa?
Yeah, I think he will. And a couple of when Pep first came in, there was a two-leg derby in the semi-final against United, and he played the kids. They went out, and a lot of City fans were a little bit upset with that, saying that they felt that Pep had disrespected the fact it was a derby. Since then, City have won the trophy twice in a row. So it's a different vibe going into this game. City play Port Vale on the Saturday evening at 5:30. So I would imagine that City will put out a team very much like they did last night at, Oxford, yeah, that's it. Went out of my mind for a second then. What a long journey down there and you forget it. But anyway, the team he put out at Oxford last night is probably fairly similar to what I think he'll put out against Port Vale, whereas United are at Wolves, aren't they? A much trickier FA Cup third-round tie. So I would imagine that Solskjaer and United are going to have to go slightly stronger at Wolves, whereas City can afford actually to field a weaker team. I'm not saying a weak team, but a weaker team against Port Vale and leave the big guns for the first leg at Old Trafford. So I would imagine City will go pretty strong in that first leg.
I wanted to get your views, Ian, on this obviously ongoing situation with Mikel Arteta that is seemingly coming towards some sort of an end. City are seeking £2 million compensation. They're being pretty firm in it. They're not particularly happy from all reports in the way that Arsenal have gone about it. What's your view on Arteta? Are you thinking, fair enough, he wants to go and take a managerial job and you wish him all the best for the future, just not probably against your club? Or are you frustrated and disappointed with the kind of cloak and dagger approach that Arsenal have gone with?
Yeah, I've had that vibe from City as well, that they're not happy with the way it's been handled by Arsenal. Pep has always been very supportive of saying if he wants to move on and better himself and get a managerial role, he'll absolutely back him to the hilt. I think Pep is very much his own man. No disrespect to Mikel Arteta, but Pep's very much the man at City. So I think if Mikel Arteta moves on, I don't think that's a massive problem for City, even though I do believe he's been doing a fantastic job. So his contributions have been amazing. But I would say that it's a good opportunity for Mikel Arteta, but not necessarily a big problem for City if he moves on. I mean, what the bigger picture is with City and Pep, I'm not quite sure. Pep has made all the noises that, you know, he's open to staying longer. And yet the vibe I get is that Pep might not be around himself for much longer, you know, maybe even gone by at the end of this season. So I'm not quite sure how Mikel Arteta fits into this. You know, is he going because he knows Pep's going, or am I completely barking up the wrong tree and Pep will announce a five-year extension or something in the next couple of weeks. I don't know. But I don't think Arteta is somebody that Pep doesn't wish very, very well to. So I think it goes with his blessing. But I do know, I agree with what you're saying, that City are not happy with the way that Arsenal have handled it.
And just finally, Ian, I wanted to ask you this. You mentioned about Guardiola, that there are murmurings, suggestions maybe, that he may be coming towards the end of his tenure at City. Do you think if Arteta had stuck around, he would have been a genuine front runner for the City job to take over from Guardiola? Or do you think that they would have looked elsewhere, they would have gone with someone who had more actual managerial experience than Arteta?
Well, actions speak louder than words. If, and this is a big if, Pep is going to go at the end of the season, or even he was to see out his contract and go in 18 months from now, if there was a feeling that Arteta had and the club had that he was going to be the successor to Pep, why would he go to Arsenal? So the fact that he's now being touted and looks likely to be going to Arsenal tells me that Arteta was not the one who was going to succeed him. So, you know, that you can only conclude, draw your own conclusion from what you see happening rather than just speculating. And that's what seems to be happening.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ian. That was Ian Cheeseman from the Forever Blue podcast talking all things City there. And you do get the sense the City are... they're not unhappy with the fact that Arteta's going to Arsenal, because I think Guardiola has always said he's not going to stand in his way. I think City are frustrated, and it's confusing why Arsenal have gone about it in this way. It's not like if it was a player, let's pick someone like Kylian Mbappe, which every single European giant would be after, then you might want to potentially get under the radar, go a bit underhand and try and get things done secretly. On this occasion, it's not like Arteta was being touted around everyone and you're trying to get the upper hand on someone else. It seems strange why, especially they played each other on Sunday in London, why didn't Arsenal officials just ask City, saying, we're interested in appointing Arteta, we'd like him to be our new manager, can we open talks with him? Because I think City would have said yes. And I don't really get that then stalked him back to the northwest to his house at 1:20 in the early hours of Monday morning. It just seemed very, very strange. But it does seem like Arteta is closing in on that Arsenal job. Remember, if you want to get in touch, call us on 0208 70 20 558. Up next, we're going to be turning our attention to all things Wolves.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Let's talk all things Wolves now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Nick Masheter, Midlands football writer for PA Media. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Nick. Let's cast our mind back. It may feel like a long time ago. Last weekend, and Wolves played Tottenham, and based on the balance of play, Wolves should never have kind of not even won that game. They dominated the game. They created plenty of opportunities. Paulo Gazzaniga in the Tottenham goal was having to pull off miraculous saves. And yet Wolves came away from the game with absolutely nothing after a late winner by Jan Vertonghen. How did Wolves not come out with anything from that game?
They certainly dominated. But it was, I think you've got to look at the Mourinho factor there with winning ugly. And I think that was almost a typical Mourinho grit performance from Tottenham, to show that they've sort of started to learn quite quickly, the manager's methods and what they want. They targeted Adama Traore, perhaps slightly unfairly, with three bookings. I think it's Kane, Alderweireld, and Dyer all took Traore out as well. In football, you don't always get what you deserve. They deserve to at least get a point. They probably deserve to win the game. But that shouldn't take away from the fact that that was their first defeat in 12 Premier League games, and they've only lost two in the last 19. So they're ticking along okay, I think, still.
You mentioned Adama Traore's name there. He was targeted because of the form he's in, and he's kind of in that renaissance part and starting to show the potential. When he was breaking through at Barcelona, he was seen as the next massive thing. He is absolutely rapid. All players of FIFA will know how quick he is. He's also incredibly strong, and yet a lot of his career had been just blighted by a lot of inconsistency. He wasn't really building on that potential, but it just seems over the last couple of months he was really a bit part player for Wolves last season, wasn't a constant fixture. Now he seems to be a really key part of this Wolves side.
Yeah, I think it's one of the, if not the biggest sort of individual success that we can look at what Nuno has done at Wolves, is to get a tune out of Adama Traore. Those of us who've covered Midlands football for the last few years, saw him arrive at Aston Villa, and he was just a headless chicken, for want of a better phrase. He would routinely beat his player for pace, but the end product just wasn't there. A cross would end up in the crowd, a shot would end up going wide, the final ball wasn't there. But now we're seeing that end product starting to come. I think there's the talent that he has, and the pace and the skill that he has. It still needs to come on a more regular basis. But he is starting to look like a player that Wolves paid 18 million quid for.
So about 24 hours after that game, Wolves discovered their opponents in the Europa League last 32. They're going to play Espanyol in the knockout stages. I'm sure all Wolves fans will be absolutely delighted to be in the knockout stages. With that draw, do you reckon Wolves fans are pretty confident that they can get through that and potentially look forward to a last 16 tie as well?
Yeah, I think you've only got to look at where Espanyol are in the league. They're bottom. I think Wolves will be quite happy with that. They could have got Inter, of course, or Porto. Celtic. I think a draw like that gives them absolutely every chance to get through. They will go there. They go there in the second leg, of course. But they will play them with absolutely no fear. And the way Espanyol have gone this season, then you certainly wouldn't bet against Wolves to go through.
Looking at Wolves' current position in the table, they are 8th place through the first 17 games, 24 points. They're only a couple of points off 5th place Tottenham. They're actually only 5 points off Chelsea, who are the final team in the Champions League positions. What do you think is Wolves' realistic expectation from the Premier League this season? Are they looking to kind of back up last season and get another Europa League place? Or are they looking at and thinking maybe there might be that final Champions League spot up for grabs this season?
Yeah, I mean, Jose Mourinho said after the game on Sunday that he felt that they were sniffing the top four, sniffing the Champions League, and they're only, as you said, they're only 5 points behind. So I think they're absolutely in the hunt at the minute, purely because you look at the fixtures that are going to come up fast and furious over the next few weeks, over Christmas and New Year, and the table could change dramatically. So points wise, there is still a lot to play for. So yeah, of course they can gate crash the top four if that's the right word, and certainly certainly push for Europe. But they finished 7th last year, got to a cup semi final. They've got to look at building on that. They're ambitious. They've got the experience now of what they did last year, and I think anything below 7th, would probably be a little bit disappointing.
You mentioned about some of the games coming up. It looks, it's not an easy game away at Norwich this Saturday, but then two massive games coming up over the Christmas period against Manchester City and Liverpool just after Christmas Day on Boxing Day, and then only a few days after that on the 29th of December. Two tough games, two big games for Wolves, and not the easiest fixture list for them as the fixtures just come thick and fast over Christmas.
Yeah, this is where the calculated gamble. We'll see whether it pays off, because Wolves don't have a huge squad. Nuno, as I said before, Nuno doesn't like to work with a big squad. So the rotation is going to be quite interesting, I think, over the next few weeks. That said, they are very good at prehab. They are very good at looking after their players. We saw last year they barely had any injuries last year. And the ones they've got this year are sort of not routine, with Willy Boley's fractured ankle, for instance. So it will be interesting to see what they do over these few games, especially in the quick succession with Manchester City and Liverpool, with the team. But that they've dealt with this for the last 3 or 4 months. They started their season in July in Belfast, so I think they're around 30 games now this season. So they're well conditioned to playing a lot of games now.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nick. That was Nick Masheter, Midlands football writer for PA Media, talking. I think Wolves, after a stuttering start to the season, have gone on a really good run. It was that defeat to Tottenham was their... They're on an 11-match unbeaten run in the Premier League, so it did end a good run for them, but they're still in a solid position. But the toughest couple of games in the space of just 3 days. On the 26th, they play Manchester City, and then they take on Liverpool 3 days later. Doesn't get any tougher than that. The two hardest games in the Premier League season for Wolves. So not easy. And as Nick said there, Nuno Espirito Santo doesn't really like working with a big squad. So it is going to be a massive test that you've got the two hardest games in the Premier League in the space of just 3 days. So it is going to be a test for Nuno and his Wolves side. Just a reminder then of all the big stories in the Premier League at the moment. Two managers closing in on new positions. Carlo Ancelotti is expected to take over on a 4.5-year contract at Everton. That is more likely to be confirmed on Saturday. Mikel Arteta seemingly has agreed terms with Arsenal, but in terms of compensation between Arsenal and Manchester City, that hasn't been agreed yet. They've postponed their press conference, have Arsenal. So maybe that is a suggestion that in the next 24 hours that we could see development on that. The Carabao Cup semi-final draw took place after the three quarter-finals last night. It will see a Manchester derby between Manchester United and Manchester City. Also, Leicester take on Aston Villa in a bit of a Midlands derby there. The first legs will take place of the week commencing the 6th of January. The second legs of the week commencing the 27th of January. So that's the Carabao Cup. Liverpool are into the Club World Cup final. They beat Monterrey. It was a hard-fought win and a late winner for Roberto Firmino against Monterrey. 2-1 in the semi-final, which sets up a final with Flamengo on Saturday. Al Hilal will play Monterrey on Saturday afternoon in the earlier kickoff, and then at 5:30, Liverpool will take on Flamengo. Looking at some of the other stories, Liverpool announced this morning the signing of Takumi Minamino, the Japanese international from Salzburg, for just £7.25 million, an absolute bargain. And it's yet another brilliant bit of business by Liverpool, and yet more praise for Liverpool sporting director Michael Edwards, that you go back 5 or 6 years, Fenway Sports Group's transfer committee was much maligned, and kind of deservedly so. It was very, very poor. You go back 5 or 6 years ago, there'd be the odd good signing, but a lot of poor signings in between. Over the last 3 or 4 years under Jurgen Klopp, it's just been fantastic signing after fantastic signing, and yet more value. And this is such a brilliant, shrewd bit of business from Liverpool to sign a player of that quality, a fantastic player that's going to add a huge amount to this Liverpool side, but also for the value that it is, only £7.25 million, an absolute bargain, a fantastic signing for Liverpool in the form of Takumi Minamino. He would officially join Liverpool on the 1st of January. A couple of other transfer lines to bring you. An interesting exclusive interview in The Standard last night, the first part of it with Daniel Levy, and it's in some of the papers today about how he is not reticent, not scared, of selling Christian Eriksen to a fellow Premier League club. Now, he's had a contract at the end of the summer, so in theory, from the 1st of January, he is allowed to speak to foreign clubs about signing a pre-contract agreement, a bit like Aaron Ramsey did last season with Juventus. Now, you're not able to sign a pre-contract agreement free transfer with a club in the league that you currently play, and you can only do it with foreign clubs. I think the suggestion is that Eriksen has been eyeing up a move abroad to Spain, to either Real Madrid, or probably more so Real Madrid than Atletico Madrid. But he is looking at a move. Manchester United have been linked with him in the past, and maybe United are coming slightly more into this conversation after these comments by Daniel Levy. You'd think it would be suicide to sell one of your best players. Well, I suppose, is Christian Eriksen one of the best players anymore? This season he hasn't been, but going over the last 5, 6 years, he has been one of Tottenham's best players. Selling a decent player at his best to a Premier League rival doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. If you're going to allow him to go, and if you're going to sell him halfway through the season, it seemingly would make a whole lot more sense to sell him abroad rather than allow him to go in the Premier League. It would seem strange, but Daniel Levy allowing that to happen. Also, a very, very interesting statistic here, or very, very good, showing how good Trent Alexander-Arnold has been in 2019. The assist for Roberto Firmino's goal in the Club World Cup semi-final yesterday was Trent Alexander-Arnold's 20th assist in all competitions in 2019. That's one ahead of Kevin De Bruyne, four ahead of David Silva, six ahead of Riyad Mahrez. It just shows the quality of that young man. I tell you what, he very much does remind me of Steven Gerrard at that age. He's that good. He really is a phenomenal player. Kevin De Bruyne is the best creative midfielder in the Premier League, one of the best out there in the world at the moment. For Trent Alexander-Arnold in 2019 at right back to have one more assist in 2019 is an absolutely phenomenal record and a phenomenal statistic for Trent Alexander-Arnold.
This is Love Sport.